is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hey, Hoopheads, save $3,500 on the Dr. Dish CT Plus and score free custom graphics during Dr. Dish Basketball's Push Beyond sales event. Shop this exclusive offer now until March 31st while supplies last. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Those are some great deals, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, this is Mike Winters, head boys basketball coach at Harlem High School in McChesney Park, Illinois, and the author of The Journey, Lessons from the Hardwood. And you're listening to the Hoopheads Podcast.
All right, coaches, listen up. It's time to kick this season up a notch and give your team the competitive edge they deserve with Game Changer. Game Changer is the ultimate tool for coaches, with features designed to help take your team to the next level. It's time to take this season to new heights. Download Game Changer for free on iOS or Android to start getting valuable stats and video your team can build on. Get the ultimate coach's tool today by downloading Game Changer. Game Changer. Stream. Score. Connect. Learn more at gc.com/hoopheads. That's gc.com/hoopheads. Prepare like the pros with the all-new FastDraw and FastScout. FastDraw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering Hoopheads listeners 15% off FastDraw and FastScout. Just use the code HHP15 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improve communication with your team. FastModel also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its playbank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. FastModel Sports is the best in basketball. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads Podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel tonight. And we are jumping on tonight to talk some NBA on our regular night. I feel like this might be a regular length episode. So we are, I think, fully healthy, right? We're fully healthy at this point.
Listen, we're fully healthy. Unlike the NBA, I'm jacked up about basketball right now. I'm all about basketball right now, Mike. It's just March Madness is coming next week. We got the NBA season kind of winding down a little bit. State of Ohio playoffs going on. Some crazy scores in some games today. So maybe the system does need to be fixed a little bit. But I think it's going to be fixed next year, maybe, theoretically, right? But we'll see. But anyways, so we're going to talk NBA. And I think we're going to look at this, you know, and we know we spent a lot of time talking about the Cavs and where the Cavs are. And I was just talking to Mike before the podcast, like, I watched the Cavs regularly, and then I kind of just watch as much other NBA as I can, but I've been watching and paying attention to the Cavs, and obviously in the last week we've beaten the Timberwolves and the Celtics, and we've lost two terrible games, and I don't consider the loss against the Suns as a terrible loss, because when you don't start, was it three of your starters and four of your rotation players, and you were still in that game, I felt like they at least competed yesterday. I mean, heck, you had Damian Jones and Isaiah Mobley playing big minutes, like rotational minutes yesterday. So, and those guys have not been in the rotation at all. I don't know how you feel. I don't consider yesterday's loss a bad loss, because Phoenix started all their starters and we started two. I don't know.
Suns had all three of their theoretical big three out on the floor playing, which hasn't happened very often this season. So the consensus seems to be
Phoenix has those three guys. Before the game yesterday, I read that they were 16-5 when all three of them started, I think was what I saw. They played 21 games.
Which makes sense. I mean, offensively, that's a pretty potent team when you have those three guys out on the floor. And the Cavs hung in there. They were right in
the game all the way up until the end. And so, yeah, I don't consider that one a bad loss. The night before, when you lose to Brooklyn, who's basically been DOA for the last 2 months, losing that game, I think regardless of who you have out on the floor, to lose that game at home, kind of disappointing. The thing with the Cavs has been they're just completely up and down. And
they're yo-yo. One night to the they're next, yo-yoing, Mike.
Yeah, yeah, it's very strange that you can beat Minnesota one night, beat the Celtics one night, and then turn around and you're losing to Chicago or you're losing to the Nets, whatever it may be. So, look, the team is clearly at this point compromised without Donovan Mitchell, their best player, but also being without Evan Mobley, and they just continuously have to shape shift to be able to figure out how to put together lineups that they can actually throw out on the floor. And so I think when you look at it right now, you would have to think that barring a complete collapse, that they're going to be able to stay at worst in the 3 seed. Now we're recording. Milwaukee was down. Last time I looked, they were down by 20 to the Kings tonight in the first half. And if Milwaukee were to lose that game, the Cavs would only be a half game behind the Bucks. And the Bucks
are down 19 at halftime. They're down 19 at halftime.
The Bucks have played better as of late, but I'm still not sure that they've figured everything out. And you still have Middleton out with the ankle injury, which I know he's been quoted as saying that it's the worst ankle injury that he's ever had in his career. And I don't know that there's a firm timetable for him to return.
Is he going
to
pull an Otto Porter, Mike? Is he going to pull an Otto Porter at some point here? I mean, my body's too broken down. I mean, he's been so injury prone the last 3 years, like just unable to play consistently.
Well, maybe he pulls the plug. I doubt he pulls the plug this year, but maybe at some point in the offseason, if he just can't get it back together, maybe he does. But Milwaukee is clearly playing better, but I don't think that anybody at this point is saying the Milwaukee Bucks have completely figured it out and they now become this unbeatable juggernaut. I don't think that's where we are with Milwaukee. They've been very good, both offensively and defensively, in the last 5 minutes of close games. Obviously, offensively, you owe a lot of that to the presence of Dame Lillard. Defensively, I'm not sure what you chalk it up to. But look, the Bucks, when you have Giannis and you have Dame, clearly their top end potential is very, very high. But they also have lots of other guys that I'm not sure how much I want to depend on any of them in a playoff series. So we'll see what happens. I think my guess is the Cavs probably finish third, but I wouldn't be stunned if they finished ahead of the Bucks too, just depending upon how and when Middleton, if he does return or doesn't return, and the Cavs get some of their guys back, maybe they can push ahead of them. Because again, after tonight, I'm guessing they're only going to be a half game back of Milwaukee. So one game in the loss column. So we'll see what happens.
Yep. So we want to look at this as perspective of who are the Cavs want to avoid that's below them in the first round of the playoffs. I mean, and I don't know if you want to do like we want to rank them or, but I think that it's clear and obvious that the team that I don't want to play in the first round that's below us is the New York Knicks, right?
That's
the team. Honestly, I think I'd be okay playing almost any other team, which probably means that we're going to probably play them in the first round because I'm saying that right now. Like, it's just.
Or do you want to exercise some demons and play the Knicks?
No.
Neither do I. I agree.
No exercising of demons here. Let's exercise our demons with someone else. I'd rather play anyone else. Like, I think probably second, just because, and then they've, you know, team that I constantly bring up is Miami. I probably wouldn't want to play Miami in the first round after New York. Anyone else, I feel like Indiana seems somewhat compromised. I know they beat the Wolves tonight. And Haliburton had a good game tonight, but he's not looked himself since he came back. And there's just something about Indiana that I feel like we would match up good against them. I just think our offense, and I know their offense is good, but I think our offense is good too. Now, once again, this is all hinged on the fact that Mitchell comes back, and now he's been upgraded to questionable for tomorrow's game. So I'm going to assume he's going to at least give it a go tomorrow. And Mobley's the big question because, I mean, he's still in the walking boot as of today, this morning. So how much longer is he going to be out? Like, I don't know. Like, man, we seemingly get everyone back and then someone else goes down. And like, when as much, you know, the only guy who's in our starting lineup that hasn't missed, obviously Strus didn't miss anything until this week, but Jaren Allen really hasn't missed much. You know, he's been, him and Strus have been really the only people that have been there. And then all the time we're missing someone else. I think the Knicks are one. I think the Heat are two. And then after that, I'll play anyone. I think we match up against anyone pretty well after those two teams. And I still think we match up good against the Heat. And theoretically against the Knicks, we match up well, but they're just in our heads right now. And I'd rather them play, like, I don't know, anyone. Anyone but us.
I would prefer to avoid the Knicks, I think, just because of what happened last season. Although, as we were talking before the podcast, who knows when Julius Randle is actually going to be back. Tonight, I think Anunoby was this, I believe this was his first game back.
It was. Tonight. He warmed up tonight with the intention of playing, and then he ended up playing.
You know, as they kill the 76ers who score below 80 points tonight. So the Knicks clearly are on the rebound. I'm not sure yet what Mitchell Robinson's status is when he comes back. Obviously, he was a guy that the Cavs had a huge problem with last year in the playoffs, and they just could not get him boxed out for whatever reason, and he just destroyed them on the offensive glass. And also, we know that in the last two playoff series that Jalen Brunson and Donovan Mitchell have matched up, that Brunson has got the better of that matchup, despite the fact that I'm guessing most of us would consider Donovan Mitchell to be a superior player to Jalen Brunson. So I think you're right when you say the Knicks kind of have our number, or they're kind of in our head. Part of me, like I said, wonders, hey, let's play the Knicks. Let's try to exercise those demons. But I think, again, it's not necessarily a great matchup just because of how physical New York is. And as good as Jared Allen and Evan Mobley are, they're two skinnier guys. And if last year was any indication, the potential for them to be out physical against the New York Knicks is certainly more than a remote possibility. And so I think if you're the Cavs, you're hoping that you're not going to see the New York Knicks. Now, if Cleveland stays in the third spot, the Knicks right now currently are a game and a half ahead of the Pacers for that sixth spot. I mean, when you really look at it, if you go from the four seed to the eighth seed, you're really only separated by 2.5 games. So, which is, all those teams are closer bunched together than the Cavs, who are 9.5 back. And then the Knicks, who are 12.5 back of the Celtics. The Cavs and Knicks are separated by 3 games, and the Knicks and the Heat are in 8th, are separated by 2.5. So there's a lot of fluidity here, which is why we kind of wanted to approach this of, hey, if you're the Cavs, who do you want to play? Who do you not want to play? Who are you kind of, doesn't really matter one way or the other. So I think you're right. I think the Knicks are clearly number one. I think you look at Miami and you say, okay, they trade for Terry Rozier. He's been hurt. When he's played, they're still kind of trying to get him integrated. I think the thing with Miami is it's hard to evaluate them just on the surface as a regular season team. When you think about that old Bill Parcells quote of eventually your record kind of is what you are, I think Miami is maybe the one exception in professional sports to that. It always feels like Miami is more than what their record is. And you start looking at, okay, Jimmy Butler obviously steps up his play in the playoffs. We know what Bam is. You've got Tyler Hero there. You got Duncan Robinson there. You have Terry Rozier now. I think that you got Hawkes. Miami just feels like a team that, ton of playoff experience, probably the best coach in the league. That seems like a team that you would want to avoid. So I agree with you. Those are the top two teams. If you had to put a team next, who would you put after that?
I mean, probably Indiana, right? I probably go in, or well, actually, you know what? No, I'm going to say Orlando and then Indiana. I mean, Orlando has no experience, but I don't feel like
they have good top end talent, but they have no experience.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah. So It's probably Orlando and Indiana after that.
I still feel like I don't want to play Philly, as dumb as this sounds, because I don't think that Embiid.
They scored 79 points in back-to-back games, Mike.
I don't know. There's something about, it's kind of like it. I don't like playing Atlanta and I don't like playing Philly. I feel like we don't play at our best against either one of those teams. And the idea that you end up playing Philly and somehow Embiid comes back for the last four games of the regular season and he's able to play through and maybe play four or five good games in a first round playoff series, I don't think that's completely out of the realm of possibility. Again, I don't think that Joel Embiid is going to strap the Philadelphia 76ers on his back after having missed a third of the regular season or half of the regular season or whatever it'll be by the time he gets back and lead the Sixers to an NBA championship. But if Embiid were to come back and play a couple regular season games and be quote unquote healthy for that first round playoff series, I wouldn't be super excited about that. And to be honest, like I said, I feel like we have not played our best against the 76ers. And I know we beat them early in the play-in tournament or the in-season tournament this year when they had Embiid. And that was probably one of the Cavs, honestly, better games of the year that they played when they beat them in Philly. But I think I would rank the Sixers ahead of Orlando and Indiana simply because of A, the playoff experience, and B, the slight possibility that you're getting back an NBA MVP sliding back into the lineup at the last minute, and that flips that team from being what might be a typical 5, 6, 7 seed into a team that, if Embiid had been healthy the whole year, probably would have been a top 3 seed. So I would probably put Philadelphia 3rd. Then I agree with you. I think Orlando and Indiana are two teams, young teams, not a lot of experience together. Certainly neither one of those teams collectively has very much playoff experience. You can look at Indiana and say Siakam won a title when he was with the Raptors, so maybe he gives them a leg up as far as leadership goes. But as you said, Halliburton, since he came back from the injury, he hasn't looked the same. I mean, pre-injury, you think back to how good he was during the in-season tournament and the way people were talking about the season he was having. And it feels like since he's been back, he has not approached that level. And look, Indiana, their offense is still top shelf, but in the playoffs, you have to be able to play some defense. And although Siakam upgraded him on that end, I'm still not sure Indiana's ready to play playoff defense. On the other hand, right, it's compare and contrast with Orlando. They are a top 5 defensive team, but their offense, as Zach Lowe has repeatedly pointed out, is on track to finish below 20th in the league for, I believe it's like 15 consecutive years that they've been in the bottom 10 in offense, which is kind of interesting when you think about, again, how good Paolo and
Is that since Dwight Howard left?
I believe that is. So I think those two teams are two young teams, each of them slightly different, but those are series that if the Cavs were to match up with Indiana or Orlando, I would feel pretty good about their chances, and I would be stunned, completely stunned, if they were to lose to either of those teams. I would not be stunned if they lost to the Knicks. I would not be stunned if they lost to the Heat, but I would be stunned if they lost to Orlando or Indiana. And then that leaves us to the last two teams, Chicago or Atlanta. I just feel like we never play well against Atlanta. And well, the Bulls have even given us a little bit of trouble this year.
Trey being injured, I mean,
right, I know we just lost to them. I think I'd probably rather play the Hawks of those two teams, just because the Bulls with DeRozan and Kobe White's improvement, and say what you want about Vooch, he's not a very good defensive player, but he can put the ball in the basket sometimes. I think Chicago in a playoff series would make you work a little bit harder than Atlanta. At least I think so.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, DeRozan has experience, you know, and now that Lonzo Ball is back sitting on the bench for them, it's really exciting for them. Like, hey, do you see that? Someone said Lonzo Ball sitting on his bench, sitting on the backpack of the bench, and then someone wrote like prayer emojis. I'm like, prayer emojis? This guy's been like collecting a big ass paycheck. Excuse my language, sorry. Big paycheck, and he hasn't done anything. He's been almost as bad as Ben Simmons. Did you see the tweet of Ben Simmons' availability the last 3 years that someone wrote, if you could explain the McDonald's ice cream machine in availability in NBA players or something like that. And I just laughed because
What's the analogy?
Well, every time you go to get ice cream or a shake, the shake machine at McDonald's
it's not working.
Is down.
Right. It's not working. It's not really working. So every time you go to get something out of Ben Simmons, it's not really working. It's down. His back is down or his mind is down.
Speaking of backs, by the way, Kawhi exited the game tonight with he threw his back out or something, it looks like.
It's not looking good for the Clippers. I mean, they had their stretch and now it feels like they're a little bit dinged up. And I just don't know how you buy into the Clippers, right? I mean, ultimately, the injury history of at least PG and Kawhi would lead you to believe that they're not going to be healthy. Is there anything on the East before? I know we're jumping to the West. Is there anything else in the East that we need to talk about?
We didn't mention Mosley's contract extension. I don't know if you want it. Congrats to him. I mean, he deserves it, right? I mean, I don't think there's any argument there. I mean, he's taken a team that, I mean, they were not projected to do as well. They're almost the Cavs of last year, right? This year?
Close to it. Probably younger.
I mean, Donovan Mitchell was huge for the Cavs last year, but I'm just saying it's definitely big news for them to be as good as they are. And not only that, but huge for Orlando to lock him up and at least seemingly be setting him in the right direction.
Well, and he's a guy, right, that when we talk about, at least, and I know I talk about it, that he's the archetype of the kind of coach that I would prefer to hire, where you're not hiring a retread guy who we know is basically a mediocre coach. Instead, you're taking a chance and hiring somebody who doesn't have head coaching experience and maybe he turns into a good coach. And look, does that always work out? No. Sometimes you get Adrian Griffin. Sometimes you get Jamal Mosley. And there's no guarantees. But what I do know is that if you hire a guy who's been an average NBA coach for 15 years, guess who you're getting? An average NBA coach. Right. So I like...
Do you know who I think of when I think of average NBA coach, Mike?
Who?
Randy Whitman.
I would say Randy Whitman probably aspired to be average. Probably was a below average NBA coach.
He kept getting jobs, though, Mike. He kept getting jobs.
He did. I agree.
Tom Thibodeau? What about Tom Thibodeau? Would he be an average NBA coach because he's never won a championship?
I think you'd probably say Tibbs is slightly above average, I would say.
Okay. I just was trying to think, because he's not won an NBA championship, so.
Billy Donovan, average NBA coach. Was with Oklahoma City, did fine. With the Bulls, did fine. If he were to ever get fired, I'm sure
he was a good college coach.
I'm sure he would get another job at some point.
Yeah. Oh no, for sure he would get another job.
That type of guy, I think, is what I'm thinking of. I think in all honesty, the NBA probably does a better job now of giving new blood. There was a stretch, I would say, in the mid-2000s where it felt like we were hiring guys that had been in the league for 25 years and those guys kept getting jobs over and over again. Whereas now it feels like we've had a lot of new blood of guys that have come in and been assistant coaches or whatever that have been given their opportunity. So that's the kind of coach, again, that I'd prefer to hire when given a choice. So let's wrap it up at the Eastern Conference with just talking about the fact that Boston and Denver, the two, I think, teams that most people, when you're looking at the top of each of the conferences, despite the fact that Denver right now is still tied with Oklahoma City, I think most people think Denver, best team in the West, and Boston, best team in the East. And those two teams have matched up twice, two close games. Denver has won both of those matchups. Jokic has been pretty much unstoppable in both of those games. And I think, to me, you can analyze a whole bunch of different things when it comes to these games between these two teams, and you can look at it and you can try to project out what would happen in a series. But I think ultimately it's something that we've talked about here on the pod a bunch of times, that when you talk about superstars, you're talking about guys like Jokic who are top two, top three, top five, guys who can carry your team to a championship, and they're going to do what you need, when you need it, as many times as you need it, and consistently do it. And then you have guys who are maybe one step below that. And I still think that that's where I would put Jason Tatum. Not that Jason Tatum isn't capable of fantastic, incredible games. Think about when he beat the Bucks in game six. Think about what he did last year in the 76ers series, where he puts a team on his back, and I think he had 46 in one of those games and 51 in the other. So he's certainly capable of that, but from a consistency standpoint, we talked about LeBron being a metronome, right? Like, this guy, you know what he's going to do night in and night out. And maybe he exceeds what you think he's going to do, but he very rarely underperforms. And I think, like, that's a level that Nikola Jokic is on, and that is not a level that Jason Tatum is on at this point in his career. And you could say whatever you want. Maybe Boston has a deeper team. They're probably going to come in with a better regular season record. They're going to have home court advantage. But if those two teams match up together, I trust Nikola Jokic to figure out what Denver is going to need from him, and he's going to put that out on the floor, compared to Jason Tatum being able to figure it out for the Celtics and putting that out on the floor again for seven games. I mean, Tatum might have four terrific games, but he's going to have three games, his history suggests, where he's going to be average, and that's not going to happen to a top tier superstar. So
I was just going to say, I don't have faith that Boston's getting to the finals.
Here's the thing. I don't love Boston, and we've talked about it before. I think Tatum is one step short of being the type of superstar that's capable of carrying his team all the way to an NBA title. I think, though, it goes back to our discussion of last week of who do you really think can win the Eastern Conference. And we said Boston, Milwaukee. I think you said Miami, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm not sure. The Knicks, as currently constituted, maybe if they were fully healthy and they were able to get Julius Randle back and Mitchell Robinson, maybe somehow, some way I could talk myself into the Knicks. But I just think I think Miami, to be honest, is pretty unlikely that they're going to go on a Cinderella run.
But maybe 2 years Jimmy Butler's new hairdo is going to inspire them.
Maybe. Maybe the Afro Puffs will end up working out for him. But
I want to call him Pigtail Puffs, saying, Mike.
There you go. Well, whatever. So then you're looking at, is Milwaukee teams? I don't think either one of us really thinks the Cavs are going to win three playoff series in a row to get to the NBA finals. I would be very surprised by that.
Would I be pleasantly surprised? Yes.
Absolutely. But I don't think it's likely to happen. So basically then you're telling me that if Boston's not going to make the finals, that Milwaukee is going to, which again, I don't think that's unreasonable. When you talk about Giannis having an MVP season, you're talking about Dame, at least offensively in the clutch, and maybe he hasn't been up to the same level that he played at last year in Portland, but he's certainly more than capable of being the best player, at least from an offensive standpoint, on the floor in any given game. So I think if you look at the Eastern Conference, you have to say that if Boston doesn't get out of the East, it's going to be disappointing. Yet at the same time, I can look at it and say,
it
will not be disappointing. Right. It will not be disappointing to you or to me, but to many around the league and Boston fans in particular, it'll be disappointing. To me, I look at it and I say, a healthy Milwaukee, I really feel like, I don't want to say is the only team, but it doesn't feel like, when you just look at the names and you say, okay, Boston's going to play Orlando. There's no way Orlando can beat Boston, or Boston's going to play the Chicago Bulls. There's no way they're going to lose that. And yet at the same time, Boston has these weird, whether it's moments, whether it's series, whatever.
22 points with 9 minutes left against the
There's a history, right? Cavs. I mean, there's a history. There's a history from an individual game standpoint, and there's also a history from a series standpoint in the playoffs.
And there's a history with this coach who I don't know if he's a good coach or not.
Yeah, I don't think anybody's convinced that he is. I think there's some things that people have talked about this season that they've liked, but I still think there's a question as to whether or not in the playoffs, matching which wits with the best coaches, that Joe Mazzulla is going to be up to that level. I mean, who knows? It remains to be seen. It hasn't been proven yet to this point. I do think that when you look at the Eastern Conference, I think barring something really strange happening, I think it's probably Milwaukee or Boston. But yet, I just don't fully trust the Celtics. And I don't even want to trust the Celtics. Like, I despise the Celtics. So it's not like I'm looking for reasons why the Celtics should win. But when I look at their team and I look at how they've performed and their lack of consistency, and just the fact, again, that more often than not, you have to have the best, one of the two or three best players in the league on your team in order to win a title. And I just don't think Jason Tatum is at that level. I mean, I certainly don't slot him in the top five. Where he is in spots 6 through 10 is arguable, but he clearly is not a top five player. And it's hard to see. It doesn't happen very often where a team without a top five player wins a title. It's pretty rare.
Yep, I agree. I mean, when was the last one? So let's think about this.
I gotta pull up a list of NBA champions, or I'm not gonna be able to.
The Toronto Raptors with Kawhi. Would you say Kawhi was a top three player at that point?
Kawhi was in that playoff run. I mean, in that playoff run, he was clearly one of the five best players. And a fully healthy Kawhi during that season would have been considered one of the five best players in the league. You're just not getting a healthy Kawhi.
I was just trying to think. We're going to go back to when San Antonio beat the Heat. 2013, because I wouldn't say that Tim Duncan was a top five player. I wouldn't say
no at that point.
Kawhi wasn't there yet.
So yeah, I think that's probably
the one before that would be 2011, the Mavericks. Like that would Dirk was not a top five player at that point. I mean, I would say probably not.
Dirk was probably a top ten player, and then you go 2 years of Kobe, then maybe you could argue that the Celtics with Pierce and Garnett, depending upon, again, how you value those guys in the league, maybe not.
So, I mean, let's put it this way. 2014 is, if we're going all the way back to 2014 to come up with one, because obviously you had 15, 16, 17, 18, LeBron and Durant, yeah. Steph. So
you at least have the shell of one of the best five players in the league in Tim Duncan. Now, clearly,
would you say the Mickey Mouse championship in 2020, LeBron or Anthony Davis was the best five player in the league? Or is that just such an anomaly because it's the Mickey Mouse championship?
I think it's probably an anomaly, but you could certainly make a case for one or both of those guys.
Was LeBron the best five in the bubble?
Probably.
Mike, do you know yesterday was the 4-year anniversary of the NBA shutting down? Can you believe that was 4 years ago?
Like, no, that feels like it was seriously like yesterday. It really does.
It feels even longer than that. It feels like it's been a long time. It just feels like it's been a long 4 years. I don't know why. I just think there was a lot of.
I feel like it was just yesterday.
And what's crazy to think about, Mike, is like Ellie, my daughter, my second youngest, as she was born 2 months before the pandemic started. So like she doesn't really know what happened, like the world before the pandemic. She obviously was a baby during the main, but still it's a little crazy. It's crazy to think that I'll always be like, oh, Ellie, you've been alive since right when the pandemic started. Right. Congratulations.
Her, her life is always intertwined with
the
pandemic.
So I don't know.
Well, let's hope we don't have to ever live through that again.
Yeah, I hope so too. And I don't want to say I don't think. Who knows what's going to happen? Yeah.
Who knows, man? The world's a crazy place.
There are clowns everywhere. So
there are clowns. There are clowns everywhere. Pro Skills Basketball is the nation's premier club basketball organization, building a European-style youth basketball academy, and is looking for the top basketball leaders in major U.S. cities to become our next city directors. Specifically, Pro Skills is looking for women and men of high character and grit who see the problems in youth basketball and want to join an elite team focused on a singular mission: to change the culture of youth basketball. This job typically begins as a part-time position with the desire and expectation from both the city director and Pro Skills that together they will build it up to eventually support a full-time city director position. If you're interested in learning more or applying, please visit proskillsbasketball.com/jobs. Hey, coaches. Excited to talk about Coach's Mirror from Teams of Men. It's a game changer for your team's film analysis, blending Kip Ione's coaching expertise with AI. Short on time or staff? This is for you. Send in a game or up to five and get back a detailed report. We're talking tendencies, strategies, even what opponents might use against you. It's like finding the other team's scouting report in your gym. And here's a bonus. Intrigued by AI and scouting? Grab our free 10-prompt PDF sheet at teamsofmenmembership.group/coachmirror. It's a quick download and a great start to revolutionizing your season review. Don't miss out, coaches. Head to our site and see how Coach's Mirror can transform your game analysis. Catch you there. All right, so
can I ask you one more question? I didn't ask you. What did you think of Rudy Gobert's technical foul? And fine.
Well, there's a lot of levels. There's a lot of levels to it, right? So the first level is, come on, Rudy, what are you doing? I mean, even if that's what you think, you clearly know that flashing up the money signs at that critical juncture, I think it's the reason, like, that technical is the reason why NBA players don't seem to particularly care for Rudy Gobert and his personality. I think that summed that part of it up. And if you're Gobert, it's just dumb because you know that you're going to get teed up for that if anybody sees it. Now, on the other hand, I think that, look, I don't want to make the leap that the NBA and its officials are in collusion with DraftKings and FanDuel and casinos and everything else to be able to steer the results of games in one direction or another. However, what I will say is that when you're Rudy Gobert and you do that, and again, I know what he was trying to say, and he came out and said it in the post-game press conference that he was making the connection between sports books and NBA officials and the league. So that's clearly an accusation that I'm not sure has any merit to it. But yet at the same time, there's a part of you that's like, here we are, we're fining Rudy Gobert, whatever, $100,000. And yet the NBA is taking millions and millions and millions of dollars from these online sports books. It seems a little bit hypocritical or disingenuous that for so long, these leagues tried to avoid, like, the plague, gambling. And gambling was this ultimate taboo. You couldn't talk about it. They didn't want to be anywhere near it. And then all of a sudden, as the world sort of shifted, now there's tons and tons and tons and tons of money coming into the league as a result of these partnerships with gambling organizations. And now suddenly everybody's got a smile on their face and is glad handing, and we're happy to take these casinos and sportsbooks money. It seems just a little bit hypocritical to me. And so that's how I, when I look at it, look, it was dumb of Gobert, and I think what he's insinuating is not true. Yet at the same time, it does feel a little slimy that the league can fine someone for what Gobert did and yet turn around and they're fining Gobert with one hand and with the other hand, they're reaching out and taking money from the casinos on the other. That to me seems a little bit hypocritical.
Mike, I want you to know I have not placed a bet since January 1.
All right.
I closed all my accounts.
All done.
When I found out that I had won money on the year, but I was going to pay because of my taxes more than I had made. So I closed it out.
That's not good. There you go. Well, it's probably a good move.
Closed it out.
Probably a good move in the long run. I'll give you credit for closing it out. Closing it out.
Anyways, all right. So we're going to transition to the West, and obviously we've kind of hit on a few things in the West. But the big thing that I wanted to bring up was Luka Doncic's amazing stretch right now, triple doubles. I don't think there's anyone that could say that he isn't the hottest player in the NBA right now, right? He's clearly the hottest player.
If his team was higher in the standings, he would be right there for consideration for the MVP. I mean, when you look at his statistics, it's kind of ridiculous how good that the guy has been. I mean, it really, really is ridiculous how good he's played. And it's just a matter of fact that his team isn't probably high enough in the standings for him to crack. I'm guessing he probably finishes fourth at this point.
Yeah.
Probably.
He had six straight triple doubles. He's the first player in NBA history to have six consecutive triple doubles with 30 points. And then last night he had 27 points, but he got a triple double as well on top of that. So his streak of 30 point triple doubles got broken, but he's just, you know, just out of his mind, Mike.
Where does Dallas finish? Go ahead, read the stats.
I was going to say his stats since the All-Star break. He's averaging 36.4 points per game on 64% true shooting percentage, 10.2 rebounds per game, 11.4 assists, 51% from the field, 41% from three, 86% from the line since the All-Star break. He's first in points per game, first in assists per game, first in triple-doubles, second in double-doubles, 15th in rebounds per game, and second in rebounding per game for guards. I would have to imagine Josh Hart is the only guard that's beating him right now in rebounds per game, because he had 19 point rebounds tonight, Josh Hart. And I know he had a lot against us too.
And he's averaging like 44 minutes a game or 45 minutes a game.
Iron Man, baby. Yeah. Iron Josh Hart. Anyway, so look, where does Dallas finish?
Where do they finish? Do they get out of the play-in?
I think they're out of the play-in.
Who do they bump though? So you're talking about are they two and a half games behind?
I thought you were saying are they going to win the play-in? I misinterpreted what you were saying.
If they stay in the play-in, I think they get out of the play-in and they end up in the quote real playoffs. My question is, can they? And look, they're only a game behind Phoenix and they're two and a half games behind New Orleans. Can they get up into that five or six slot? I mean, I know they can. What's your thought? Do you think they will?
I think they could get up ahead. New Orleans would be the team, right? That would be the team that would fall out. Of the teams up there.
I think Phoenix would fall out because somebody goes down with an injury. If Phoenix stays healthy, I think Phoenix stays in the top six. And I think New Orleans has enough of a cushion, and knock on wood, they've been extremely healthy.
Well, they're playing the Cavs tomorrow night, Mike.
They have a pretty good schedule coming down the stretch. I think I was reading it somewhere that they have four more home games than they do away games in their remaining, whatever they have, 16 or 17 games. So I think they have a lot of the projections that are out there have them almost a lock to make it and remain in the top six. So to me, I think Phoenix would be the team that would fall out if one of the Booker, Durant, Beal combo goes out for any significant length of time. Then I think Dallas would be able to climb back up. I look at Dallas, honestly, I feel like Dallas is not similar to the Cavs in a sense of the style of play or any of that kind of stuff. But I feel like Dallas is kind of one of those teams that you could look up on a given night and they're beating one of the top teams in either conference. And then you could look a night later and they're getting beat by one of the teams near the bottom. They just seem like they're, despite the consistency of Luka, the rest of their team seems very, very inconsistent. And that's kind of produced this sort of up and down record. Like before they started winning, before they won three in a row here, they had lost, five out of six, maybe something like that. And so they're just, to me, they're just not a very consistent team. So I kind of expect that they're going to finish in that 7-8 slot because I think
New Orleans has 10 home games and 8 away games left. But okay. I'm looking at their schedule and I don't feel like yes, they have some easy games on their schedule, but here's who they have to play the rest of the way. They play us, which obviously we're undermanned right now. They play the Clippers. Who knows about Kawhi? They play Portland and Brooklyn, but then after that, they play Orlando, Miami, Oklahoma City, Milwaukee, Boston, Phoenix, Orlando again, Phoenix. Like, that's rough. That's a rough stretch right there. They play the Spurs.
Well, you have theoretically, right? So what do they have? You said they have 18 games left, so they have the Blazers once, the Spurs once, they have
Detroit once, and Brooklyn Detroit once. And that's it. And then everyone else is a Brooklyn, playoff team.
The Trailblazers against. They have the Trailblazers twice. So you have five games against sort of those bottom feeder teams in either conference. I don't know. I think New Orleans has enough of a lead, and I think that schedule is just, I don't want to say soft enough, but just enough that I think they'll be able to stay out of the play-in. And I think Phoenix probably stays in there, although if I was going to bump a team out to put Dallas in there, I would probably bump out Phoenix due to injury as opposed to the Pelicans.
Pelicans. Okay. But listen, I'm not saying you're wrong, Mike.
No, I know. I know.
Yeah, but then when I look at Dallas's schedule, I mean, I don't really want to need to read all these off, but Golden State, I mean, okay. Then they play Utah, Sacramento, Houston, Atlanta. They play Golden State three times the rest of the way. They play Houston twice the rest of the way. They play Detroit. Yeah, I mean, I think Dallas has an easier schedule for sure. We'll see. Two and a half games. I want to play Golden State right now because no Steph, right?
Correct.
You know, he's got cleared to do court work, whatever that means.
It says he's supposed to rejoin practices on Friday. So you would think that if he comes back to practice that he's going to be pretty close to returning. But anytime you start talking about – it's his ankle, right, I believe?
Yeah.
So you start talking about Steph's ankle, and that's not a place where if you go back to the beginning of his career when he had all kinds of ankle problems, that's probably not an area that you feel too good about if you're a Warriors fan, coach, trainer, that Steph's having difficulty with his ankles. It's so interesting, look, that we've spent – and all you have to do is listen to national pods or read a bunch of stuff that it's come down to kind of all season. One of the biggest talking points has been which one of the Lakers and the Warriors are more for real and which one is more capable of going on a big, long playoff run. And the honest truth is, unless something I think relatively weird happens, I feel like those two teams are going to be playing each other in the 9 and 10, and one of those teams is going to get bounced before they even get to play a second play-in game, which when you consider the star power on those two teams is really kind of crazy. And to be honest with you, like if those two teams played right now, today, whatever, notwithstanding Steph's injury, let's just say that everybody was healthy, I'm not sure which one of those two teams that I'd feel confident about in a one game series. If it was a 7-game series between the Lakers and the Warriors, I think I would lean Lakers, yeah, just because of their size and physicality. But I feel like in a one game situation that Steph could have a 45-point game. I'm not sure LeBron could at this point summon up what it would take just as kind of a one-man show to win that game, whereas I kind of feel like Golden State and Steph Curry could generate that type of game. And again, in a one-game scenario. But it's interesting that those two teams more than likely are going to match up, and one of them's not even going to get a chance to play a second play-in game, let alone get into the playoffs. So yeah, it'll be really interesting if those two teams end up being the 9-10 play-in game in the Western Conference.
Yeah.
Which I kind of expect it to be.
Yeah. That'll be a fun game. That might be the most exciting 9-10 game or ever. Or it will definitely be.
Yes.
Right.
It's a short history, but hard to believe that moving forward, you're going to have, that's a pretty high level of star power in that game. Let's put it that way.
You root for the Lakers, right?
Root for the Lakers or think the Lakers would win it?
No, I'm saying you would root for the Lakers, right? Over Golden State.
Probably. Yeah, probably. Although, yeah, I would probably root for the Lakers in that game.
All right. Any other, what other teams in the West did you want to talk about? Is there anyone else you wanted to talk about in the West right now?
Well, let's just we've basically hit on every team except for a couple. So let's just quickly hit on a couple more teams. Sacramento, I think when you look up and down the Western Conference,
Sabonis has the most triple doubles in the NBA this year.
He also had a streak of, and I'm pretty sure that streak is still going, that he was chasing Moses Malone for the most, I want to say it's 10 games in a row. And I think Moses Malone's record was 51, if I'm not mistaken. And when I heard that mentioned, I think Sabonis was at like 47 or 48. So anytime you're battling Moses Malone for rebounding records, you're doing something right. I mean, I think it's interesting with Sacramento because Sabonis is clearly a really, 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 really good offensive player. So and yet,
his streak might be in trouble. Like you said, 20-10, right?
I believe that's what it was, if I'm not mistaken.
So he's at 18-10 with 9.5 left, and the Sacramento Kings are up 26 on the Bucks.
That's a case where you probably leave him in just to get it if the streak is still alive.
He's not on the floor right now.
Well, if there's still 9 minutes to go, my guess is maybe you put them back in. I don't know. It'd be interesting. Anyway, I think Sacramento is the team, just sort of like last year, where if teams had to guess, like, hey, who do we want to play? If they could arrange it, I think a lot of teams would probably choose to play the Sacramento Kings. But yet, I feel like offensively, this team still is really good. I mean, I wouldn't want to deal with De'Aaron Fox for an entire series. And last year, Sabonis had that hand injury going into the playoffs. And so during that 7-game series with the Warriors, Sabonis was kind of compromised and maybe not at his best. Now he still has limitations. Clearly he's not a rim protector, but offensively, I feel like he's about as good of an offensive center from the standpoint of the things that he does as anybody in the league. So I'm not sure. I go back and forth between people are sleeping on Sacramento and they could easily win a series, or is the conventional wisdom right that this team just doesn't play enough defense, and as good as Fox and Sabonis are, that maybe that's not enough to carry them offensively to overcome what their defensive efficiencies are. And so I think most people probably lean that direction, that Sacramento's a nice story and they had a good follow-up year to what they did last year, but that they're really not a threat to win not only multiple playoff series, but that they're not even a threat to win one. And so I go back and forth. Sometimes I feel like the team's underrated, and other times, yeah, I'm like, yeah, they're right. these guys just don't defend. So I think a lot of people which are going to be lining up to try to play Sacramento. Which is crazy, by the way.
Mike Brown is your head coach, and they don't play defense.
Right. But it just goes to show you, right? I think if you're a good coach at any level, what you do is you adjust to your personnel and you try to maximize what you have. And so if you're Mike Brown, you look at your roster and you're like, yeah, I might want to play better defense. But the fact of the matter is that my two best guys are very, very, very good offensively and at best average on defense. It's still interesting to me that De'Aaron Fox can't be a better defender. As fast as that guy is, and he's got long arms and he's quick, and just it feels like he'd be a guy that could be a really good defender, but for whatever reason, he's not. So bottom line for me on Sacramento is I think no matter where they finish, there's going to be a lot of teams that if they end up drawing the Sacramento Kings in the first round, that they're going to be pretty happy with that draw. We talked about Phoenix. We talked about the Pelicans. We talked very briefly about the Clippers. I'm not sure there's much more to say about that. Minnesota, I think, is in trouble without Towns. As much as he's a goofball and as much as people feel like Karl Anthony Towns is not necessarily a winning player, I do think that when you lose one of your three best guys, and especially this team is somewhat challenged offensively, and clearly that's the side of the ball that if you're going to say Towns brings a ton of positives to, that's the side of the ball that we're talking about. And so I think as good as this team is defensively, they were already down around 19 or 20 in offense. And without Cat, going to be even tougher, put more pressure on Ant. And so I think Minnesota probably continues to move down the standings. I won't be surprised if they finish fourth in the Western Conference, which, I mean, other than when you start talking about hosting a second round series, probably doesn't, who knows what the matchups are going to be, whether you're at two or three or four, any of those teams can be scrambled up together and the matchups just are going to be what they are. But I think Minnesota is going to fall a little bit. And then Oklahoma City, the last team we haven't talked about.
Number one seed now, Mike. They're the number one seed could potentially have two lottery picks this year.
Yep.
Because they have Houston's pick, but it's top 10 protected. And then who's the other one? Say if someone else's pick, but it's the top 4 protected. Who is it?
Do they have a Brooklyn pick, maybe? I could be wrong.
I literally just saw them go, and they have the Clippers pick that's not protected at all.
Okay. Oklahoma City is set up to do kind of and go in whatever direction that they want to go from this day moving forward. And they're going to have a lot of options come the offseason to try to improve and upgrade their roster and put the right group, whatever that may be, around Shea and Chet Holmgren and wing Jalen Williams. We'll have to see. But I think when you look at Oklahoma City, what you have to wonder about when it comes time for the playoffs is, how are they going to play when it comes to playing against an experienced team that is older and full of veterans? So you look at, okay, if the Lakers or Golden State end up being the 8th seed and Oklahoma City's 1, you're talking about two teams that are going to have either LeBron James or Steph Curry on those teams playing against a team in Oklahoma City that has never really done anything in the playoffs, and none of their key players have been a part of that type of championship run. And clearly they've had a much, much, much better season than the Lakers or the Warriors. But when you look at it and you say, okay, we're the Oklahoma City Thunder going against LeBron James and Anthony Davis, even though the records would tell you that Oklahoma City should be the runaway favorite, something in you is going to say, I'm not 100% sure that I feel good about a team as inexperienced as Oklahoma City going against a guy that has as much experience as LeBron does or as much experience as Steph Curry does. And I think the argument that Oklahoma City would go back at you is, hey, we have the best point differential in the Western Conference. We've done it all year. We're going to make teams adjust to us because what Chet Holmgren brings out on the perimeter and his ability to shoot the ball is going to make up for maybe the lack of size that we have inside that would make it tough to deal with a team like the Lakers that has LeBron and AD and Hachimura and these other guys that have a tremendous amount of size. So I don't know. I still think Denver gets to the one seed. I'd say Oklahoma City probably finishes second. And then, I don't know, the Clippers have been playing poorly. Maybe toss it up between Minnesota and the Clippers for 3-4. I'd probably bet on the Clippers to move up to 3, and with Minnesota falling down just because of having to rely so much on Ant without Towns. So we shall see. We shall see. There's going to be, whatever it ends up being in both conferences, there's going to be a lot of interesting matchups that I think, more so than in any year that I can remember at least, that I don't know that the seeding, I don't know how confident I'm going to be that the higher seeds are always going to win in either conference, but probably even more in particular in the West. I think you could make some really compelling arguments that some of the lower seeds in the Western Conference, just because of the experience factor, can get up and bite one of those top seeds. But we'll see.
Yeah, I agree. Listen, I don't have – Oklahoma City almost just – they're young. They have no real experience. You know, obviously SGA has been playing so well. Be interesting to see how they do in the playoffs. I don't have, like, thinking any thoughts or dreams that they're going to, like, over-succeed. I think they're going to probably – you know, I think if they walked into if they got to this, you know, they won a playoff series, I think they would deem that as a successful season. They just have such draft capital. I think it's a Nets pick, by the way. They have such draft capital, like, that they're going to be able to do a lot of things for a long time. Like, it's pretty amazing, right?
Yeah, I think the thing with Oklahoma City that you have to say is, one, I don't have any question that Shea is going to play well in the playoffs as a number one option. I think the question just becomes around them, is that team collectively as a group, are those young guys ready to perform at the type of level that they would need to get to the NBA finals? And I'm not sure that doesn't happen very often in year one of a team's iteration. And this is really year one of this team's iteration. So I think this year, whatever you get, especially if you can win one playoff series, get to the second round, get that experience of what that feels like, and then you come back next year with whatever your roster looks like in terms of upgrades and free agents and all the different options that Sam Presti and the Thunder have, they'll probably look at it as a disappointment if they don't make the Western Conference Finals. But I think as long as they get a series, if they're one or two seed, if they can get one series, then after that, I would look at anything that they get beyond that as gravy, especially considering, again, the asset haul that they have that they can start to deploy at any point to really upgrade their roster around SGA and Chet and, like I said, J-Dub. So we'll see what happens.
All right, we'll see. And we'll talk about it next week, Mike. We'll talk maybe some – hopefully we'll talk about – a state championship for the Olmsted Falls Bulldogs. That's what I'm hoping we're talking about next week.
That would be exciting. That would be exciting for the girls program at Olmsted Falls. And hopefully we'll be talking about a couple Cavs wins too, man. I'm ready to talk about like a 2 or 3 game winning streak, although I'm not sure it's happening. The good news for the Cavs is Milwaukee is currently down 29 to Sacramento with 6 minutes to go in the fourth quarter tonight. So it looks like
the Cavs score will again, remain within.
I don't know. I didn't honestly look. So
here, I'll look really quick. I'll update you all. Did he continue? Oh, he got to 22. We're good.
Okay, so there you go. So if the streak was still alive, it's still alive.
Well, it was still alive tonight. 2 days. He got it 2 days. He continued it 2 days ago, despite their dismantling of the other team. He went 25-15 right. 2 days ago. So
okay, so it's probably still going. Anytime, like I said, you can beat Moses Malone in any type of rebounding record, then you are clearly doing something right. And obviously, it helps the Cavs. So Cavs will be only a half game back of Milwaukee. I believe they'll be tied in the loss column after tonight. So despite the fact the Cavs are scuffling, if they can get guys healthy and get it back together, there's still a chance that they can get to that 2 seed, which will be nice. So let's leave it there. Thank you for checking out tonight's NBA episode, and we will catch you on the next one. Thanks.
Your first impression is everything when applying for a new coaching job.
A professional coaching portfolio is the tool that highlights your coaching achievements and philosophies, and most of all, helps separate you and your abilities from the other applicants. The Coaching Portfolio Guide is an instructional membership-based website that helps you develop a personalized portfolio. Each section of the Portfolio Guide provides detailed instructions on how to organize your portfolio in a professional manner. The guide also provides sample documents for each section of your portfolio that you can copy, modify, and add to your personal portfolio. As a Hoopheads Pod listener, you can get your Coaching Portfolio Guide for just $25. Visit coachingportfolioguide.com/hoopheads to learn more.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads Podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.